This is Pat Tomlinson, and I'm talking today with Dr. Jim Smart. Jim is the Ag Spectrum Research and Teaching Agronomist, and he is a key part of the support we provide Ag Spectrum associates and growers throughout the country. Jim is working from his home office today on his farm in southeast Kansas. How are you today, Jim, and how are things in your part of the world?
I'm doing well, and for the first time in many, many months, we've received a nice rain, so that's very positive.
Well, that does sound like a good thing. How is harvest going in your area, Jim?
Much of the corn harvest has completed, and quite a bit of the soybeans have been harvested. So I'd say 3/4 or so of the harvest is already done.
Well, I'm glad to hear you've made that much progress and you're on the downhill side of harvest. Well, let's jump into today's topic of micronutrients. Over the last few weeks, we've tried to cover the big three macronutrients from a perspective of how the maximum farming system recognizes and satisfies the crop's needs for each of these. The intent is to be useful as a refresher to associates on ways to capsulize the message they deliver to growers and feel prepared to answer their questions about the system and the specific nutrient needs. I want to continue that effort with the focus on how we deal with the crop's needs for micronutrients in the maximum farming system, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to talk with me about the topic. One of the things that I remember first making an impression on me relating to the maximum farming system and micronutrients comes from some of Gary's presentations at the Maximum Farming Forums. He's talked about the fact that although we have these labels of micronutrients, secondary nutrients, and macronutrients, they are all really subcategories within the group of recognized essential elements for plant growth. And essential means essential. You can't really get more or less essential, although the amounts needed may be greater or less. N, P, and K aren't more essential than zinc, boron, manganese, iron, etc. They're all essential, just required in different amounts and different times. When you think about it that way, it seems a little harder to rationalize how the conventional approach to fertility treats micros and macros very differently. Many farms test regularly and assume replacement levels of P and K need to be applied and worry about mining the soils if they don't add P and K each year. Yet many of those same crop acres have probably never been tested for micronutrient levels and never had any specific micronutrient products applied. If all of them are essential nutrients, it makes you wonder why our approach is so different and why we don't worry about micros too much and seem to just keep growing crops for many decades or even into the centuries. How should we make sense of this, and what should we be thinking about when it comes to micronutrients, Jim?
You're right. Most soils have not been tested for micronutrients. However, it's not uncommon in fields that have very high testing levels of potash and DAP to have zinc deficiencies show up in corn. And you say, well, why are we having these deficiencies? Sometimes we have such high levels of the macronutrients that it's hard for the binding sites to take up the micronutrients that are also needed. So we can actually overload our soil profile with nutrients like potassium and cause it to be harder or more difficult for the plants to take up some of the micros that they need. And another thing I've seen is there are some companies that say, oh, for instance, you're low on boron, so let's just pour the boron on and we'll just put lots of boron on the soil. But really, things like boron are needed primarily at the time we get to reproduction. If the plants aren't taking it up, or if we're not actively growing roots and growing roots into that zone where that micronutrient is, we may be deficient, even though if you take a soil test, it says, oh, you're adequate, or maybe even on the high side. But if you have a plant uptake issue because of dry weather or soil compaction or maybe some herbicide problems, you're not taking up the micronutrients that are most needed at that time for reproduction. Testing is fine, and we can do tests, but there's a lot of variability with micronutrients, and their uptake ability depends on things like temperature and moisture, and really we depend upon microbial populations to help release these micronutrients and make them available in the soil solution so the plants can take them up. If it's compacted soil or too dry of soil, the micronutrients are not working effectively and we're not releasing those micronutrients at the level required by the plant so that they can be taken up. So then we can have a deficiency even in high testing soils.
It sounds like there are a lot of the same issues with early season micronutrients that come into play with regard to phosphorus availability to the emerging plant. Cool temps with limited microbial activity, limited or no movement in the soil, making placement important for a small emerging seedling with small roots, and the need for the nutrients at a specific time to optimize plant growth. Is that a good way to think about it, or am I on the wrong track there?
That is right, and especially if we have challenges with soil compaction or a really warm, dry period. In warm, dry soils, our micronutrients can become less available for plant uptake just because there's less in the soil solution. The microbes that are releasing these or cycling them through are less active, and so they're less available. Someone can say, well, I never had this problem in the past, but I do now. Well, it may be that we have a dry year, or we've got some compaction issues, or maybe we've changed some herbicides and the herbicides are affecting our root growth, so we don't have the uptake ability that we might expect.
I also wonder about relying on scouting and recognizing micronutrient deficiency symptoms as a signal of a problem. I would think that symptoms may often be missed or misdiagnosed as one or more of the other common issues we see in the fields that we deal with, whether it's herbicide interaction, weather response, root feeding, or something else. There's always a lot of different things going on in the field, and it's not always easy to sort through the symptomology.
You're correct, and there are some companies that say, well, we have this magic ingredient that makes your plant set more fruit, and it's called, for example, maybe it's molybdenum, and we'll spray that on the beans and you'll magically get more pods. Your plants are a little bit short on molybdenum, but it takes a very small amount. The needs are very small. Oftentimes, if there's a little bit of deficiency of molybdenum, it's not just molybdenum. It's probably manganese and zinc and boron deficiencies also. The plants are having a difficult time taking up what they need. Usually it's not one item, so to add one thing to the mix may or may not solve the issue. Usually we need a package of several micronutrients to overcome a deficiency.
Does it make sense to think that there's a couple of ditches we can get into? One may be never thinking about micronutrients at all unless there's an obvious problem. But on the other side of the road is a ditch that involves spending a lot of time, effort, and money on soil testing and maybe tissue testing for micronutrients multiple times during the growing season, not recognizing that it may not be about the amount of a micronutrient in the soil being the limiting factor, but other aspects of the uptake process that can be a weak link in the desired chain of events. Or in the case of an immobile micronutrient, there may just be a spatial variation from the point where a sample was pulled compared to 20 or 30 feet down the row. Trying to manage the availability of multiple micronutrients across every square foot of a field when they are difficult to test for accurately because of the minute amounts in the samples, that seems like as much of a ditch or maybe even a deeper ditch than not thinking about them at all. You just mentioned a package of micronutrients being usually a more effective way to approach the plant's needs. Of course, for us, that package at planting time is kickoff to add in furrow. Can you talk about kickoff and its special characteristics?
Let me say first that all the micronutrients in kickoff have been chelated so they don't bind readily to other soil particles, so they're more available for plant uptake. They're not tied up by other things going on in the soil, at least right away. The plant roots can take those up readily without the interference of other factors in the soil. So that's why the chelation process is so important to have chelated micronutrients so they're more readily available. Does every acre on your farm, for example, need the manganese? Well, maybe not, but if it was only 25% of the acres were deficient and we put kickoff on the entire field at a low rate, let's say 6 pounds of the total package per acre, then we covered our bases and made sure we don't have a deficiency on any of the acres.
So it's more economically efficient to apply the small amount of micros needed at a particularly critical growth stage in a way that gives every plant access to avoid any deficiencies than it is to try to predict where a deficiency will occur and attempt to deal with that specific area only.
That's right. And because it's banded in the seed furrow, we're using very small amounts. Now, if you were to broadcast these nutrients, it might not be economical because you would use a much larger volume and it would be much more expensive to broadcast these nutrients and hope that at some point the plant could find them and take them up through the roots. But if we're banding it right under the seed, we're very likely with the chelated formulation for the plant to be able to take up those nutrients and access what it needs readily.
How do we determine the rate recommendation for a specific field? I know, for example, that very high phosphorus soil tests cause us to increase the rate of kickoff since excessive phosphorus can tie up micronutrients in the soil. Higher plant populations can also increase rates. Are there other factors we consider?
There are several things, but pH is really important. If our pHs are high, we know that that tends to make it very difficult for some nutrients to be taken up, like iron or even zinc in high pHs. And then in low pHs, things like calcium, it's difficult to take up that calcium that we need, and manganese. That's why we spend a lot of time talking about the importance of balancing our soils and trying to get them into a neutral pH. On acid-type soils, mostly east of the Mississippi River, that's why we use lime, a high calcium-based lime, to try to neutralize the soils or get to where we call it a sweet soil, where it's in that range from 6.5 to 7.2. And in the high pH soils, we can use things like sulfur-type products, ammonium thiosulfate, banded beside the row, ammonium sulfate, or other things that contain sulfur to acidify that soil layer right next to the seed. So at least right in that rooting zone next to the seed, we can get better uptake of some of the nutrients that are difficult to take up in high pH conditions.
One of the five R's that guide our system is the right time, and we know that kickoff contains the critical micronutrients for the earliest stages of the plant's life. As we shift focus to the other micronutrient application events in the maximum farming system, how do the foliar applications of SCORE fit into the crop needs during the reproductive stage of growth?
The SCORE contains different amounts and different nutrients than the at-planting nutrients. SCORE is primarily designed to assist with the reproductive phases to set and hold more fruiting structures. And that may be more pods or more kernels on our corn. Things like zinc and boron are very important for that to occur. Now, there's a small amount of molybdenum in the mix. It's a very small amount, so it's not toxic, but we do need a very small amount. There are other agents that will say, oh, we can come spray molybdenum on your field and do all these miraculous things. Well, generally, they're putting on much more than you need. If it's foliar applied and taken up by the plant, we need a very small amount. But generally, it's not just, oh, we need calcium or, oh, we need manganese. We need a combination or a balance of manganese and calcium and zinc and boron to make the reproductive process most efficient to set and hold more fruit. And one of the things when our plants, especially corn, but also soybeans, when we get into a reproductive phase and say we're pollinating, the root growth generally slows down greatly. And sometimes it even goes backwards because the plants are putting almost all the resources towards reproduction. And our foliar nutrition not only provides a small amount of nutrition, but it stimulates more root growth so that we can take up more of these nutrients that are naturally occurring in the soil when we need them the most at pollination. Instead of having roots that are declining or maybe almost stopping growth, we're stimulating new root hairs and new root growth to take up more nutrients. And that's probably why we often see a pretty good response from a foliar nutrition, because we've given that extra boost of not only the nutrients that the plant needs, but also extra root growth, so we can take up more of what the plant's requiring at pollination to set and hold more fruiting structures.
I think that's a really important point you just made that we need to emphasize in discussing our foliars, that the specific mix of micronutrients in SCORE applied with Grozyme and PT21 may deliver a relatively small amount of the micros, but by actually getting into the plant will trigger additional root growth that wouldn't otherwise occur. It's that larger root system that really gives us most of the benefits through increased access to soil nutrients and more interaction with the soil microbial population. The relatively small amount of microbes in our foliar can be a significant difference from the way many farmers think about applying fertility, with a mindset that if a little bit is good, more must be better. The big payoff for the grower, though, isn't from buying more fertilizer, it's from supporting and enhancing the natural soil and plant processes that create a nutrient-rich soil environment which maximizes crop yields. Have you seen a focus on that total nutrient load applied cause confusion or misdirection among growers?
Well, that's right. And I've seen other companies or farms where they would apply boron at such a high rate they would almost turn the leaves white. But the analysis has shown the small amount of boron in score, we can actually get more boron to penetrate the leaf and be within the plant where it does some good with a very low rate they might use with several pounds per acre, but it's not penetrating the leaf. So the formulation where it's chelated and we have a superior penetrant where it can penetrate that exterior of the leaf and get into the plant where it does some good is really important. Not only the formulation, but a penetrating agent where we can get it to absorb through that thick leaf cuticle and get it into the plant is very important. It's not a total amount that's needed. You know, in pounds, it's probably ounces, but we have to get it into the plant. And that's why I think our foliar nutrition has been so successful in many areas where people in the past have said, well, we've tried foliar nutrition and it didn't work. And they're correct. The formulation they used and not using a superior penetrant, it didn't work because they didn't get it to penetrate the leaf and get into the plant. They just spread it on the leaves and didn't penetrate well. When you hear people say, well, we've tried foliar and it didn't work, they're probably correct. It didn't work. But that doesn't mean it can't work. It means they didn't use the right formulation or the right penetrating agent to get it to enter the leaf and translocate where it can be most effective.
Well, Jim, are there any other questions or topics relating to micronutrients that we haven't covered yet, but that you hear from associates or growers that might be good to address?
I have heard several times where especially people that are applying livestock manure, whether it be hog manure or cattle manure or even chicken litter, say, well, I put on litter or manure, so I shouldn't have any micronutrient deficiencies because I have all this manure. Actually, when we're using high levels of manure, that's when we see some of the biggest responses from the micronutrient applied foliar with our system, because they have such high levels of phosphorus or potash that it's difficult for some of the micronutrients to be taken up because all those slots or places where the roots could take them up is already filled with that other nutrients. So it's more difficult to take up some of the micros at very small amounts. We see very good responses with our foliar score applications where we have heavy manure because maybe it's there, but it's difficult for the plants to take up the quantity that's needed to set and hold more fruit. The manures are wonderful for our soils, no question about it, but sometimes we get into areas where they've applied a large amount for many years and we're almost overwhelmed by one or two nutrients, and it overcomes the plant's ability to take up some of the things like manganese or iron or even calcium.
That brings to mind a word that we often use in describing the optimum soil environment, referring to nutrient levels, and that's balance, having a balanced soil.
That's exactly correct. I'm not saying don't use manures. They're wonderful. They're very helpful on our soils. They're a good nutrient source, but sometimes we can get too much out there, and it makes it difficult to take up some of the other things like manganese, or maybe it's zinc or iron. If we have a iron deficiency showing up in a soil, oftentimes it's a nutrient uptake issue rather than a nutrient availability issue.
Maybe a good way to summarize our message on micronutrients and our discussion today is that with a goal of maximizing profit and economic crop yields, trying to manage each of the essential micronutrients needed for plant growth in the same way that we manage macronutrients through soil tests and finding optimal ranges will be difficult, costly, and ultimately less effective than focusing on virtually eliminating the possibility of yield-limiting deficiencies by simply applying the needed micronutrients when they're needed in the most efficient and effective way, which can be accessible to each plant.
Well, that's right. And we're talking about very small amounts. We're not talking about hundreds of pounds per acre. We're talking about ounces per acre mm-hmm. in the most part. But they're still needed. They're required by the plant. The manganese, we have to have that for reproduction, as well as zinc and iron. You don't need a lot, but if you're deficient, it's going to affect your plant's ability to set and hold more fruit. So instead of setting just one or two pods per node, or maybe three pods per node, we know that each node can flower up to 20 times. And we have the potential to set easily 7 or 8 or even 10 pods per node with soybeans if we have a balanced nutrition and moisture, and we don't have a lot of stress from heat or other things on the plants. We can set and hold more fruiting structures on every node. And that's one of the reasons why we have so many producers that are having fields of soybeans that are 80, 90, and even over 100 bushels per acre, because they found that foliar nutrition, especially making two applications, provides the plants that extra boost to set and hold more fruit, where soil tests show that they're very good with their soil test levels of the macronutrients. The micros are making the big difference. That big jump to get them to the next level is provided by that foliar nutrition of the micronutrients at flowering time.
Well, Jim, you've been very generous with your time and expertise. I really appreciate it, and I think it will be helpful to our associates. I've taken enough of your time, so I'll let you get back to your work. But again, thank you for spending the time talking with me today.
Okay. Have a great day, Pat.